Hello and welcome. We're back. My name is Brian Beckner. I am super stoked you are joining us. I'm trying to write down a thought I had, but I'm also talking into the microphone and it's not working because the words I'm saying are confusing the words I'm writing. So I end up writing the words I'm saying instead of the words I'm writing. But now I'm back. You have my full attention. Episode number 300 of the Baller Lifestyle Podcast. That's right. We've been doing this shit like 6 years. That's crazy. And also so dumb because it's like literally giving us nothing. I'm like, oh, we're going to do a podcast in like a couple years. I had realistic expectations. I'm like, this thing's going to blow up in a couple years. Now, here we are. Better part of more than half a decade in, and it's just like kind of the same, which is fine. It's still fun to do, and we still love doing it for you and hearing from you guys. Episode 300, it's fucking Christmas time, and there's a lot of Christmas shit going on, and we wanted to do a little Christmas-themed episode. I am joined now, as I am each and every week, by Mr. Ed Daly. Ed, what's up?
Happy holidays, Brian.
Oh, right. Sorry. Because people get mad when you say Merry Christmas, except no one gets mad when you say Merry Christmas. Nobody gives a fuck if you say Merry Christmas. No one's ever gotten mad about it.
If you said Merry Christmas to my father-in-law, who actually had to move around Europe during the Holocaust, he still would have been like, all right, Merry Christmas.
Yeah.
Like, nobody cares.
Who gives a shit? If you say Happy Kwanzaa to me, I'm not going to be like, excuse me? That's not the holiday I celebrate. What? Get the fuck out of here.
I know it sounds terrible, but I've never known anyone to celebrate Kwanzaa.
Me either. The guy that
I've known black people and I've, you know, right. I try not to ask every black person I know, but I do ask some and now they're like, Christmas.
Right. You know? Kwanzaa was, in fact, created by a professor at my college, Cal State Long Beach. Mm-hmm. Fun fact.
I do know from, I think it was like the Sesame Street episode where they like kind of explain the holidays to the kids. They're very derivative. Instead of a menorah, they have like a canora.
Yeah.
And instead of seven candles, they have nine. Or, you know, it's like... It's a little bit like they kind of – it feels – even though all religion is this, it feels like they're making it up as they went along.
Is it similar to Jesus Christ, the Messiah, being born of a virgin birth around the winter solstice like 25 other religions much older than Christianity? Is it anything – is it similar to that at all?
Yeah. More or less.
Oh, because I don't think people realize that they don't have the market cornered on virgin births around the winter solstice. That's all I'm saying. Look it up. It's happened before.
And you know what? So before we move on to the show, I was thinking about this the other day. I saw like a high school team as the Crusaders.
Yeah.
I was thinking, you know what?
No,
that might be more problematic than Redskins. Doesn't that mean Crusader? Are we proud of the Crusades?
No.
That's a terrible time.
No. The Crusaders.
Those are terrible people.
They were fucking doing horrible murders. And don't even get me going on the Inquisition.
Oh, yeah.
The Inquisition would do some shit to you. Yeah. Speaking of inquisitive people, it's Ed Daly and I, we're sitting here talking, and we're omitting another member of the broadcast team that joins us tonight. And but the thing is, it probably won't sound that different for the rest of the show because he'll really pick and choose his spots.
He picks his spots.
He's got a thing. He's written something down that he has fucking holstered, and he's going to break it out at a moment, and he's going to want a lot of reaction for the one.
He'll be mad when he doesn't get it.
Right. He's for the one, maybe two things. He'll be like, I'm back. And then we won't react. And then he'll spend weeks.
He'll send us like 30 texts right, about it.
So, with, that aren't I'm back, that they're like, they have the word back in them, but they're not I'm back.
Right.
We are joined now and we're I love having him on.
Love having him on.
He's a great dude. And he does the Bachelor Lifestyle podcast with me. Bachelor coming back just after the first of the year, the first Monday of the new year. Pilot Pete is coming in and he's swinging a big meat stick and he's going to drop the hammer. Could possibly break Bob Guinea's sexing record on The Bachelor. Looking forward to that. Of course, I'm talking about Mr. Jason Stewart. Jason, how are you, my friend?
Hey, Jason.
Hello, everybody.
All right.
A couple things here, house cleaning moments as you guys were opening the show here. I've been a regular contributor to the show for, you know, if you guys have done 300 episodes, I've probably done the second most as a contributor. Yeah, would you agree?
You're like Fonzie in season one. You weren't in the credits, but you're like right there.
No, he's more like Chuck Cunningham.
So next year, we're just going to pretend he never existed.
Exactly. Jason, you were making a point, I think.
So I've been doing this show quite some time with Ed, and this is the first time that I've heard that he knows black people.
Oh, what are you talking? Oh, he lives in New Jersey.
And by the way, Ed, I mean, the Crusaders thing, comparing that to the Redskins, like, obviously you don't know. If Catholics or Christians do anything, it's never wrong.
That's a good point, Jason. Yeah. I stand corrected.
Let me give you an example. There was a bunch of priests in Pennsylvania and Boston that were doing some really bad things. And instead of kicking their ass out of the church, they just reshuffled them. They sent them to other churches.
They had too much love to give. They were just sent to another church.
They sent one prolific boy buggerer to a school for the deaf.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
I like that movie.
Spotlight.
That was pretty good. And now I see they've remade it exactly the same, but about fracking, and it's got Mark Ruffalo in it. Like, I don't need like this.
Oh, I saw a preview for it, and it just didn't seem fun. It seemed worse version.
Real bummer. There's not going to be one breast in that movie. I can tell you that much right now. And it's, you know, there's a high bar. If I'm not going to see at least one nip slip, I'm going to need a higher form of entertainment than fracking. I get it. Fracking sucks. Fuck fracking. I get it.
I saw a fracking movie on an airplane, and I thought that was one too many.
Oh, the Matt Damon one?
Matt Damon and the Office dude.
Krasinski. Krasinski's like Trump's America action hero now. He's like, the Russians are in Venezuela. We got to get down there. I'm like, what?
Hold big on. Fan of his wife.
Emily Blunt. Yeah, she's from Sicario, yeah?
Yes, she
Sicario is. One, yeah. Okay, did you have a point that I interrupted there, Ed?
No, I never have a point.
Oh, perfect. Ed, Jason Stewart, anything else you'd like to add? Any opening remarks?
Let me just preface this episode by saying that you guys did me a favor the last time you had me on by talking about my favorite movie of all time and Boogie Nights.
Great movie.
And that I must say that podcast went off the rails a little bit.
I don't think it did.
We welcomed in some new blood.
Chris Morales.
Different energy.
Was not very focused, but I think it was still a pretty good podcast.
I think it was a good show. It was so good that you made zero tweets about it and advertised it not at all to your 20,000 Twitter followers, Jason.
Yeah, I mean, there's just certain things that I got to keep in mind
but
here.
You didn't even say anything bad.
Yeah, I was wondering what the controversial part is.
I think maybe growers and stiffers. You're talking about
just
dicks?
Just general misogyny. I don't need to be.
You know, it's Boogie Nights.
And then there's you guys are doing me another favor here by talking about my favorite holiday movie or song ever. And I would even say that, like, it's a holiday song, but just as a song, like the
Please
other 11 months out of the year.
You, do you no. listen to this outside no. of Christmas time?
Not at all, but I will say that it stands up. Like, the song is a real catchy tune. Yep. It's great mid-80s goth.
So,
It's much better than We Are the World, the other song.
Other Christmas song.
A high bar to cross. Better than We Are the World? That's like, hey, it's not as painful as a as AIDS. Like, okay. All right. You got it.
This song is like my apple, pumpkin pie. I love pumpkin pie, but I only eat it at Thanksgiving. And then the rest of around Thanksgiving, I'm like, why don't I eat this the rest of the year? It's so good. And then every time I hear this song, I'm thinking, why don't I just put it in my phone and listen to it the other 11 months out of the year?
That would be weird.
Why would you eat, like, you would eat pumpkin pie on Easter or, like, in the summer?
Still pretty good. I mean, that's some damn good pie.
It
is delicious,
but it has a certain time of year for it.
You know, I was eating some pumpkin pie this Thanksgiving, and I like pumpkin pie. And you know what I was thinking? I was thinking, I could go for a different kind of pie right now. I could go for an apple pie.
We go three.
Pumpkin apple.
Pecan.
Pecan's great. Third. Pecan's a great pie.
That's kind of our standard. We do three for Thanksgiving.
And I'll also admit something else, that growing up, you know, I grew up white trash. I'm from Costa Mesa. I think that's pretty known. We'd throw a big dollop of Cool Whip on that pie growing up. And I haven't had Cool Whip in a while. And I'll be honest, I know it's disgusting. It's like whipped oil with sugar, and it's
Miracle Whip.
It's everything that's wrong with it. And you know, now we get like the organic, like hand whipped craft whipped cream. Sometimes somebody here will even whip up the whipped cream themselves, or maybe even like a creme fraiche or something like that. And I'm eating that pumpkin pie, and I go, you know what this needs? So you know what I should be having with this? Cool Whip. Should be having a big gob of Cool Whip on the top of this.
Along those same lines, people always have their gravy, their specific gravy recipes and all these things. I gotta admit, I like the jar gravy, the turkey gravy.
The Jell-O? The gelatinous?
Yeah, I just like it. It's because, like, I grew up with that white trash upbringing. Like that aspect of my mom is like a South Jersey trash person.
Yeah.
And that was introduced when I was a kid. And like, when I have somebody's delicious, like regular gravy, I'm thinking, I kind of want the shitty jar gravy.
No, I get that. I get that. Hey, you don't have, I don't have it on Thanksgiving. You never have it on Thanksgiving. But if you, and it's been a long time, but if you run into some stovetop stuffing, the fucking out of the box shit.
Yeah.
You're not going to be bummed out. You're not going to be like, oh shit, stovetop stuffing. Like, who made this shit? Like, you're going to eat it. You're going to enjoy it. You're going to love it.
And Chappelle has a great routine about it.
Does he?
Yeah. That's the one. Well, when he talks about, he opened his last special where he did the puncher right in the pussy.
Sticks and stones. Yeah.
It was about stovetop, I think.
I can't remember. But I'm sure it was Chappelle, so it was great. Let's try to get Jason Stewart back in the conversation. Jason, so we wanted to talk about
Speaking of nostalgia, this song.
Yeah. We wanted to talk about, it's a divisive Christmas song. And one, you would think of this, like, this song came out in 1984. That's the year they had the Olympics in L.A. I went and saw.
35 years ago, this Christmas, 35 years.
Yeah, I went and saw Mark McGwire at Dodger Stadium, put it down for the USA. I think they might have played.
Carl Lewis was lighting up that year.
Japan, yeah. He had a good Olympics. No Russians. We're going to have a No Russians Olympics this next Olympics, as if anybody gave a fuck about the Olympics anymore. I saw Detlef Schrempf put it down at the Forum. I think they played Italy. It was big swarthy guys. It might have been Greece. I think it was Italy, though. And Detlef Schrempf just put it on him inside, outside, like no problem. The whole fucking crowd was chanting Detlef. But it was 1984 and this song came out, Do They Know It's Christmas? And you look back, there's not a lot of new Christmas songs. And I feel like we'll get into some of the, but it's the same like dozen songs that you hear every year around Christmas. White Christmas, that drummer boy piece of shit. What are some other ones? Simply Having a Wonderful Christmas Time. Oh, that's we'll talk about that later.
That's the worst song of all time. But
Jingle Bells,
White Christmas,
yep. Frosty,
Silver Bells, It's Christmas Time in the City.
You know who does a mean winter wonderland?
Yeah,
is Eurythmics.
Oh,
great version of Winter Wonderland. The reason why, I mean, to contradict your point, there are a lot of new songs made about Christmas.
They don't catch on.
Traction, like I think these bands or these solo acts, they see Christmas songs as easy money, and they're probably like, let's put some effort in and buy a writer and make a brand new song, and maybe we'll get on those on that great list of songs that you hear every Christmas, and they just fail, and I think all of them just end up going back to the standards.
Yeah. So that's we'll get into more. We'll talk Band-Aid first. But we, just to preface, and Jay Stu's got a point, Mariah Carey, which is All I Want for Christmas Is You, she had a vision where she's like, I'm going to do a new Christmas song and it's going to fucking blow up. And it's been out for like at least a decade and it went to number one for the first 25
time. 25 years old now.
It's 25 years old. It went to number one for the first time this year. And I read she's due to pull down about $600,000 this year just from that song. Something she recorded 20 years ago is going to just in the mailbox. She's going to get more than $500,000 just mailed. Like Jay Stu, you did a couple episodes of According to Jim.
Yep.
Big show, probably still on TV land. That when your episode of According to Jim or Gary Unmarried comes out, back when you used to be friends with Jay Moore, before he went crazy, when you get a residual check from one of those shows, it's pretty nice, right? That's some mailbox money. Give me an example of one of your residual checks from either A, Gary Got Married, Gary Unmarried, or two, According to Jim with Jim Belushi, who's got two sons named Jared. Go on.
Well, I got a royalty check, and it was a 2019 Eastern European distribution. So as the Ukraine and Croatia and former Yugoslavia is enjoying, according to Jim, probably for the first time, I got paid $5.17.
They're calming their nerves from all the tensions over there.
Yeah.
A little Jay Stu action.
No, Novak Djokovic is like, I need me some, like, John Belushi dead. Is there a lesser Belushi brother? That one that's completely unfunny, that's never did anything of interest. Like, can I find him?
They're having a movie marathon of Taking Care of Business and Mr. Destiny.
So you could see Jay Stu, big time actor, a guy that's fucking performed. He's been on shit. He's getting residual checks. His are like $5. Mariah Carey's $600,000 from the song. And I read, I think, that she's made since she dropped this Christmas song, she's made over $60 million just from this song.
But one interesting thing about her career is she was, until like a year ago, still insisting she was a pop star that had different range. And now she's just leaning into it. Like, I'm the Christmas lady.
Yeah, she doesn't give a fuck. But you know, this song, and I'm not a Mariah Carey fan. I couldn't name one other song that she's done, like Heartbreaker or something.
It's a good song. I think it's a good song.
Yeah, it is a great song. I think she now holds the record for most number ones. She's got more number ones than Elvis.
Oh, I don't even know her songs.
Yeah, me either. She's got more number ones than Elvis. She's got more number ones than the Beatles. All the biggies.
How about, does she have more number one songs than Garth Brooks' alter ego? What was that?
Chris Gaines?
Chris Gaines.
He scrubbed the internet of Chris Gaines, if you can believe that.
No, Mariah Carey did that kind of music that none of the three of us would have ever listened to. It's like the I guess we know Whitney Houston stuff a little bit more, but it's kind of in the same genre of just like, you know, that just isn't our demographic.
It's R&B.
Top 40 radio.
Yeah. I mean, what about what's his name? The guy that rapes all those teenagers, R. Kelly.
Harry Glitter?
Oh. R. Kelly was a godlike figure in the 90s. And I didn't remember him once.
He did the one.
Michael Jordan.
I got to say, I still like the remix to Ignition.
Yeah.
I like that song.
I don't know any of his jams. I know when he's like, I've been in the closet and you fucking guy.
He did like an opera.
Yeah. And he's opera. Like, yeah, because he's insane. And I'm like, oh, this is an insane person. There's an insane person doing music.
Yeah. And that was like 20 years ago.
Yeah. Well, things aren't going too well for him. Okay. But we're here to talk about Band-Aid. Do They Know It's Christmas Time? 1984. Here, I'll just give you a, should I play it or what do you guys want to do? Should I read the Wikipedia? I thought I'd play it and we could discuss as we played it. Maybe you guys could look on also.
Okay.
Yeah? No? No ideas? I mean, I'm reaching out for help.
I'm wondering if we wait, we build it up and then play it.
I was going to say, I think that's the way to do it because as the documentary did, you know, the documentary told the story.
What a piece of shit. That's worse than Gremlins. Yeah.
And then they paid it off at the end by doing the entire song. And then they just clipped that part and made it the music video for MTV, that last part of the documentary.
That's a good point. So Do They Know It's Christmas? It came out in 1984, written by Bob Geldof of the Boomtown Rats. Who?
I didn't know that band.
They did Up All Night.
Jim Rome's Up All Night was a Boomtown Rats. But I think that I knew Bob Geldof more.
Live Aid.
Not at all. In fact, I was a big Pink Floyd guy. My dad was a big Pink Floyd fan.
Yeah.
And the movie The Wall came out.
Oh, he plays. Yeah. He's the guy in The Wall.
He plays Pink Floyd.
Yeah. Yeah, he does. That's exactly right. He is that guy. He wrote this song. He's like Welsh, I think, or Scottish. I don't know. And he saw there was like a series on the BBC talking about how people were fucking starving in
specifically Ethiopia, right?
Ethiopia. And I mean, Sam Kinison.
Right. Sam said,
move to where the food is. Yeah. Yeah. It was Ethiopia. People were starving. Did that just end?
I actually read up on this like a year or two ago, and Ethiopia is one of the however they did qualify it. It's the most one of the most rapidly growing economies in the world.
Shut up.
That doesn't mean they have the type of money that France has or whatever. But they actually. From this movement starting 35 years ago, they have done very well because of these charities and stuff. Like it actually did pay off. He did a great thing for humanity.
Yeah.
You could make the argument that they at some point went from starving to being fed. And I think they started to eat enough food to be healthy enough to give each other AIDS.
Man. You're definitely not retweeting this. Stu.
Oh my God. I was going to say starving or being fed with the help of Bono, which is the decision you make.
So we should talk about Bono because it took me. So I don't know why he gets the solo. I don't. And I feel like there's a documentary. Just about
there's a bigger question mark to me. The opener
Paul
of
Young.
The song.
Paul Young.
Paul Young was famous for like 6 months. And he was able to capitalize on Live Aid and this and his song. He had one song and it was done better by the person who wrote it, Daryl Hall. This was a Hall & Oates song, Every Time You Go Away.
Oh, yeah. You take a piece of me with you.
Yeah. That was the only reason Paul Young was famous, and it wasn't even his song. And he was not famous in 1985,
so
or 1986, whatever. It all went away for him. But he's the lead. He's the lead of the song. He opens it.
So let me make a point here. This song, while popular in the United States of America, was not a number one song here. It was number one in a whole fucking shitload of other countries and was a massive, massive hit. And I would argue that while Paul Young is not a well-known guy here in the USA, he probably was a big, big, and he probably has lots of hits that were UK hits, and that's probably why he had so much juice in Do They Know It's Christmas Time at All? Jay Stu, you're going to say.
So that's exactly right. So I had the exact same, curiosity, yep, that Ed has. So I did a deep dive on Paul Young. He was a teen idol in the late 70s, yep, in Great Britain. He was the guy on all the teen magazines.
Okay. So his Cross the Atlantic was when he did the cover, but he was already something in England.
He was big time in England, very famous, and which kind of leads me to another character in this whole thing. And by the way, Paul Young not only started the fucking song, he also gets a part towards the tail end of the singers.
No, he bookends him
a couple chunks.
Yeah, big.
And looking back,
and that's some really quaff on that guy.
Great hair, yeah. Great mullet.
And if you really want to like reshuffle, because I think in 1984, I think Geldof and crew were like, Paul Young, of course, he's the most famous Brit. We got to go with
this guy.
But looking back, I mean, Phil Collins, who did drums exclusively, I want to say he was a more successful solo artist singing than Paul Young ever was.
For sure.
But this was
the infancy of Phil Collins.
In 84, Sting was way bigger than Paul Young. Yeah. Sting was huge. I feel like in that list, and when we watched this documentary, which was awful, the band they kept bringing up first, Spandau Ballet.
Yeah.
That was the big name. They kept bringing them up first. Like, yeah, oh my God, we got Spandau Ballet.
Yes.
They were the thing that if you get,
they were hot.
There, you get a lot of hot names in here.
They were hot. But so I'll make this point. Paul Young is primarily he has a great voice. He's primarily a vocalist. And Sting, he can sing. But he's the bass player that sings, you know. Phil Collins, again, Phil Collins was just the drummer until Peter, the sledgehammer guy,
Gabriel
leaves the band. And then Phil Collins is like, hey, don't hire another singer. I can do this. And then Phil Collins, great, amazing, but was still in the infancy of his solo career at that point. Paul Young is a voice guy. Now, I will say this. You also had George Michael there. And George Michael is not only beautiful, but this man had the voice of the ages. I mean, still does not get enough credit. And when we talk about Christmas songs later, we'll talk obviously about George Michael. But he was just sort of at the beginning of his thing, whereas this Paul Young guy, Britain, and also singer, and also peaking at the time.
Well, I mean, George Michael wasn't even George Michael. He was Wham.
Yeah, he was still in Wham. Yeah.
He was Andrew Ridgely's other half.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and like I think that there was a story in here. Did you guys read that story about Paul Weller?
Paul Weller from The Jam.
Okay, so
Malice.
I was thinking RoboCop.
That's Peter Weller.
Peter Weller.
Okay. We got to review. Ed, put that on the list. We got to review RoboCop. What are we doing? What are we doing that we haven't done RoboCop?
How have we not done a half hour on Clarence Boddicker?
Exactly. We need RoboCop. Put it on the list. It's the next movie we're doing. Okay.
Yeah, we are.
Yep.
And I should shelve this line for when we do it, given that you invite me to do it. But I'm going to say.
Hold on, Stu. It's because it's so rare that you repeat a line. You don't want to do it now because you then it's done. You won't do it again.
Keep them wanting more.
Yeah. Like in 1985 or whenever that movie came out, RoboCop, the creator's version of the future, was a bunch of souped up Ford Tauruses.
I'll buy that for a dollar.
But this... But this
funniest this thing you've ever said on the show.
Paul Weller. Let's get back to Paul Weller. Okay.
Town Called Malice, the Jam. Great band. See them if they come to your town.
Town Called Malice is a great song.
Yeah.
I forgot about the Jam.
I did a deep dive on him as well because I had read that all of these big egos kind of played nicey nice during this whole thing. But Paul Weller, I guess, was a big asshole, and he made a. He made a condescending comment to George Michael, and I guess this comment was quoted from George Michael. He said to Paul Weller, "Don't be a wanker all your life. Have a day off."
Wow, that accent.
Wow.
That accent was stunning. I could see that. Well, there were a lot of big egos there, and at one point in the documentary – and it,
the biggest,
it's on YouTube and you can watch it if you want. I wouldn't suggest it because it's so fucking boring. But at one
point,
at one point,
Boy George
was like,
he was in New York.
Yeah. He was like, who's that that sang before? Was that? And he like got it wrong. And they're like, no, that was George Michael. And he's like, sounded a bit camp. He goes, but I guess it's George Michael. So that makes sense or something. Like, it was super douchey, like camp. You're dressed like a fucking woman.
You're in the culture club.
Yes.
I will say that the documentary, it was amazing to watch this and then think there was a time where George Michael had to come out of the closet.
I know. He's so gay. He's so gay. But we didn't know. We didn't know. It was a different time.
I mean, we were still under the impression Liberace was just looking for the right one.
Exactly. So. Paul, who's my favorite guy from the Hollywood Squares? Paul Lind. Paul Lind, he was just a confirmed bachelor. Like, what's the big deal? He wasn't gay. Okay, so
you guys want my Paul Weller knowledge real fast?
Yeah, sure.
Let's get right to it.
Yes, you read his.
The one
can you do it in the accent?
Please don't.
He was the one that pissed off George Michael, right? But I'm like, who is this Paul Weller guy? I kind of remember the Jam. You know what band he was fronting at the time this came out?
It
was
Style Council.
The Style Council, which... as I listened to the music, it was right up my alley. It kind of sounds like a Depeche Mode meets Pet Shop Boys. Yeah, and I was listening to all that back then. I don't remember anything by that, and I don't remember this guy. And I think if you read a little bit about him, he was right up there, maybe even more famous than Paul Young because he had some time over there. He was a huge British act.
Huge.
And he didn't get any time on this song. He may have gotten like two words. And I think he was pissed off about that.
I believe he was also in Dexy's Midnight Runner.
No, his Style Council keyboardist was from Dexy Midnight Runner.
Oh, that's what it was. That's
Paul Weller's part.
Right. It was early. It was a different time. It's hard to go back and like figure out. But here's some of the other people that were hold on. We got off track because Bono, originally I came up with Bono, and I'll be honest.
Dressed like a Hasidic Jew.
I'm drinking. I never usually drink during the show, but we're doing this on a Friday night, and I'm not a weekday drinker, and Friday's the weekend.
Fair.
And I'm drinking a Stone Enjoy by 1120 Unfiltered IPA. And it's almost 10% alcohol, so I'm feeling it. So Bono, I never realized, and this is how dumb I am until recently, how sickly diminutive Bono is.
Yeah,
he's a tiny man.
There's a big part of it where he's between Simon Le Bon from Duran Duran.
Yes, and Sting.
And Sting, and either those guys are both 6'8",
yes,
or he is a miniature person.
So nobody look this up right now because I'm going to look it up, and we're going to take over-unders on Bono's height. And you got to understand that the whatever the internet says, you got to knock 2 inches off that, okay?
I think he looks 5'5", because
five?
I don't see Simon Le Bon as 6'5".
So So Ed Daly, you have Bono 5'5". I'm not sure how many stone that is, and that's weight. I don't know how they measure height.
That's weight. I have a sad revelation.
Yeah.
First ever cassette tape I ever got.
Yeah.
7 and the Ragged Tiger, Duran Duran. That was the first one.
Hey, listen. Hey,
I had that.
I was like 8 or whatever, but that was my first tape ever. I got a tape recorder, and that was the first one.
I was just telling somebody today that I was not a Duran Duran fan, and in fact, I remember riding around in my buddy Lance's brother Derek's 280Z. He was older. We were probably about 13. And Derek was driving. He's probably about 5 years older than us. And we're in his 280Z, and I'm in the back seat. And he had the windows down, and he started pumping Duran Duran's Rio. And I slid way down in the seat because I did not want to be seen with two other dudes in the vehicle with Duran Duran pumping out the windows. But we're on Bono's height. Jay Stu. Ed Daly has set the bar over. He says 5'5". Jay Stu, your thoughts. Bono Vox, Bono Houston, what is his height? He's very small. What do you think?
I'll say 5'8".
5'8", a normal height. You've given him a normal.
No way he's normal.
There's no way he's 5'8".
It's much less about me thinking he's short than thinking LeBron's tall.
Right. Okay. Interesting.
He'd have to be like Manute Boltall the way he was.
So I've looked it up, and I'm just on the Google page that tells you people's height. Bono. And again, you got to knock off 2 inches. Okay. Right. Somebody says they're 5'6", which Bono says he's 5'6". That means my man's 5'4".
What? He says he's 5'6"?
5'6".
Holy shit.
Yeah, that's little.
Good call, Ed.
That's little. Now, hold on. There's a link here that says Bono's real height is finally solved, and it takes you to a message board. Oh, here are the pics. He's 5'7".
No way.
Minus 2 inches. No way. There's no way.
There's no way he's 5'7".
There's no way he's 5'7".
Seriously, when Simon Le Bon's standing next to him, it's like Mark Eaton in a huddle next to John Stockton. Like there's no comparison.
And by the way, the listed height on Le Bon, I just Googled
6'2".
That's a normal
height.
People typically aren't tall.
He didn't do well in a yachting incident, right? Simon Le Bon,
wasn't that
his thing?
That's right. Yeah, he was a yachter.
Yachting troubles.
And by the way, the 7th of a Ragged Tiger cassette that I also owned, I think the first single was The Reflex. I was all over that music. You go back to 1984, and I think Duran Duran may have been the biggest band on the planet.
Yeah, they're huge. They're massive. They're
huge.
Sadly,
I just want to add, the second tape I ever owned was Combat Rock, The Clash.
Yeah.
And I used to tell people the first thing I ever owned was Combat Rock, but now I'm mature enough to admit it was Duran Duran.
Okay, I'll tell you my first records, because this is pre-cassettes. And this is embarrassing. I mean, two are not embarrassing. One, super embarrassing. The Police, Synchronicity.
Synchronicity, that was huge. I had the tape.
Yep. I also had Men at Work, Cargo.
Wait, that's mine. That's my first one. Yeah. Men at Work, Cargo was my first cassette tape.
We're talking about my first.
Who Can It Be Now? Is that?
No, it's the album after that. It's the album.
No. Who Can It Be Now? You're right. It's Business as Usual.
Business as Usual, the yellow and black one. But my
Cargo was Overkill, and It's a Mistake.
Yep, great album.
It's a Mistake.
But my first album, Billy Joel, Innocent Man.
Oh, that's the doo-wop one, right?
Yeah, this 80s Billy Joel. 80s Billy Joel.
The worst.
That's what.
We had, what was it, Glass Houses or Broken Glass or something? Yeah, that was a great rock album. That was a great rock album.
The doo-wop was one of the worst of all time.
That's the Christie Brinkley one, where Brinkley's in all the videos.
Uptown Girl. Yeah. That's terrible.
So bad. It's so bad and had so many hits on. Okay.
My point about Le Bon, real fast. Duran Duran, probably the biggest band in the world at the time. And I read, as you guys probably did too here, that he, when Geldof was selling him on doing this, he got the impression that he was going to do a duet with Sting. He was going to sing half of this thing. Sting was going to sing the other. And then I guess a bunch of the other people were going to sing the chorus. And he showed up and he was kind of thrown off by that. He gets some pretty good FaceTime and he sings a couple crucial parts of the song. And then what's his face? Taylor, his bandmate.
Was John Taylor, the bass player.
He did bass on the entire song.
Yeah. So that's, and you get some of that from the, documentary. Who's the guy? Who's the blonde guy?
Oh, the guy who looks like Greg the Hammer Valentine.
Yes, yeah, that guy.
Figure him out.
I looked it up. Ready?
Okay, yeah.
This again. I did a deep dive. I have no idea who these guys are. So those two guys that were just kind of yucking it up, and they got a lot of FaceTime behind the scenes, and they were just a part of the chorus for the chorus. They were a band called Status Quo.
Okay.
You guys know Status Quo?
I don't know, but I did read something about Status Quo. I think it was them. They weren't invited, but they showed up with Blow. They showed up with Coke. That was their thing.
Yeah.
They showed up and it was like, okay, these guys are too fucked up to sing, but like, let them hang out because it's improving the vibe.
Well, I think Geldof's Boomtown Rats label had a couple just random bands. And I think that Status Quo was on the label, and they had been doing hit songs or hit British songs in the late 60s, early 70s. These guys were old.
Wow.
This is like Matthew McConaughey, Crash at high school.
Right. So he's talking about, because a few of the guys were like, I didn't realize so many people were going to be here. I didn't realize this many guys were showing up. And then the Status Quo guy's like, we all kind of got on it last night. He's basically saying like, everyone's like, so fucking
powder.
Right.
Let us be involved.
Everyone was super hungover. And once you get that sort of aspect of it, you're like, oh, this makes sense. Cause they all look a little haggard. Le Bon looks real puffy. Like, this was not a healthy group at the time.
No, that's the thing about
wasn't a healthy year. 1984 was not a healthy year.
That's right. Peak cocaine.
And those 80s kind of goth pop guys were emaciated. Yeah. They were all anorexic and they had the massive hair that threw it off even more.
Yeah. Yeah. So who else?
I Googled another one from the documentary. I was wondering who it was. There's some androgynous looking person named Marilyn who was a pseudo reggae singer. But then I did a little digging. This was Gavin Rossdale's ongoing boyfriend. I didn't realize Gavin Rossdale was this old.
Rossdale swings both ways?
Google? Of course.
Google
Marilyn, Gavin Rossdale, and it'll pop up right away.
What?
I didn't know he was bisexual.
This was an amazing rabbit hole I fell down trying to figure out who this person was.
Shut up. Marilyn, Gavin Rossdale. Shut up.
I got the feeling that he wasn't very welcome. Remember when Phil Collins kind of shot him a look as he came out of doing his drum set?
Whoa, Gavin Rossdale used to be Androg.
I didn't realize that all this. Like, it's just known that he and Marilyn had a thing.
What? They both look like chicks.
Yeah, it's amazing.
What?
We're talking about the lead singer of Bush, right?
Yes.
But I mean, one thing, he looks great because he's way older than I thought he was.
Yeah. He
was a thing in the early 80s.
He put two babies inside Gwen. Gavin Rossdale. Hold on. How fucking old is this guy? We need. Hey, listeners. I need a song. I need a jingle for how fucking old is this guy? We do how fucking old is this guy all the time. I got these guys out here that make a mates.
How fucking old is this guy?
Gavin Rossdale, age. Oh yeah, we need sports. How fucking old is this guy? Okay, hold on. I'm on images. Have you looked this up yet, Ed? Are you disqualified?
No, I have not looked it up.
Okay. Jason Stewart.
He had a thing with a guy
in the 80s.
35 years ago, I mean, at minimum. So let's say he's 20, he's 55.
Jason Stewart, your thoughts? How old?
Yeah, I would say 58.
58, 55. Yeah. You guys are both right on there. I would, had we not been having this conversation, I would have guessed
49.
Yeah, I would have said 48, 49, maybe 50. He's 54 years old. Gavin Rossdale.
Thing with somebody in this video.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah, Maryland. That's weird. That's
stunning. And I did read one of the people, and none of us will know who it is, but one of the people in the video was like famous for having a sitcom on the BBC where there was like some song, you know, like when something cheesy happens where a song becomes a big hit on the radio in the 80s because everybody's on cocaine.
Yeah, yeah.
So one of the people there was like a sitcom star that like shut just up. He had just some random dude who had nothing to do with. And I saw that Bowie and McCartney like sent in a, sorry, I can't make it, but we'll put like liner notes on your album.
Yeah.
We'll praise the effort, but they were out.
Of course.
It seems like the bands on the official list that I didn't really catch. I didn't see Eurythmics. I think Annie Lennox would have stood out.
Yeah.
And then they also list Frankie Goes to Hollywood, who on the documentary is doing like a phone call in. Frankie Goes to Hollywood was huge at that point.
Relax.
The one big song.
Yeah. But I think it was a different guy from, it was that guy with the long straight hair that looked like that one actor that killed Brandon Lee in The Crow.
Oh, yeah.
He had that long stringy straight hair. I think he was.
No mention.
I think he was. Yes.
No mention of the Who, they'd be another British big time.
Right, at the time.
Yeah, Bowie, McCartney, I would think the Who would be, no Stones mentioned?
No, of course not.
I mean, that's the thing. That's the
this
thing.
Is
I
the
think
80s.
Shutoff was going for a younger demo. Mm-hmm. I think Status Quo sneaked in with the Coke.
Yeah.
And then Kool and the Gang for some stupid reason.
So weird. Amazing. So weird.
They're American and into disco.
The studio. Yeah. They're not British.
So
they
weird.
Nothing to do with it. It just happened to be in London at the time.
Also, up until that point, known as an instrumental like funk band. I think this maybe Celebrate was like just about to come out. Like they weren't. This wasn't Kool and the Gang. Wasn't like the disco party band that you're thinking of right now.
There were 70s when you know their big songs dude. Were in the 70s.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Didn't they sing September?
No, that's Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Oh, okay.
See, that's what I meant. Yeah, I know that's what you meant. There was a lot of you know who was there? Siobhan from Bananarama.
Big
fan. And also I was speaking to somebody a couple years ago that had just come from the night before. She was at a party and Siobhan from Bananarama was there. And I was like, hey, I mean, Siobhan, like she was so banging in the 80s. And she's like, no, still today. She looks so good. She looks amazing.
I think Bananarama's greatest gift to us was
Siobhan
in the Karate Kid soundtrack. Cruel Summer.
Yeah,
that was
jam.
Bananarama's greatest. And by the way, I have to correct you. I have to go on record as correcting you. Kool and the Gang had many hits that had vocals.
No, they had vocal hits, but not until later in their career.
No.
Yeah, they started out as an instrumental band. Don't question me.
But they were instrumental like
in the 70s.
But like 71, they were a known thing in the disco era.
I guess, yeah.
We're talking Get Down on It.
Yeah, jam.
Ladies Night,
yep.
Jungle Boogie. I mean, come on.
Yeah, those are all good jams. You're right. Okay, I'll give you that.
And by the way, the sitcom actor was known for playing a hippie. So like he was like a specific character. Dirty. He had long hair. He aged the worst because nobody cares about anything he's ever done.
Dirty piece of shit.
There was a Human League spotting. Now Human League at that point had a couple really big songs. I want to say that Human League, at least in America, was more popular than Stand Out Ballet. Human League was
Human League there? Don't You Want Me?
Oh yeah, Don't You Want Me was their big one. But then they did that follow up that was
I'm Only Human. Of flesh and blood.
These are made. That owe their careers to John Hughes, right? Like he,
yeah, totally.
He's helped them all out.
Yeah, for sure, 100%. It's interesting to because I'm looking at the Wikipedia and it's like everybody that was there. Did you need the entirety of Spandau Ballet? Couldn't you have just one guy? They had the entire Spandau Ballet was there.
I did note that I'm guessing it was Taylor, one of the Duran Duran guys, showed up at the studio in a Duran Duran t-shirt, which seems like that's kind of lame, right?
I love that. Yeah, no, it's meta. Like
seeing Marshawn Lynch in a Marshawn Lynch jersey at Taco Bell or something.
Would he do that? So what else? All of Bananarama was there, most of Duran Duran.
This band called Heaven 17, which I that doesn't ring a bell whatsoever.
No, never heard of them. They're probably big over there. Oh, here's one. Jody Watley.
Oh, yeah. Oh. American.
Yeah, American. Just kind of there. She looked a little coked out. She's got that square jaw. But just kind of hanging out, doesn't get a solo, just kind of singing along, like interesting choice to include. And also she's kind of like a dance music artist,
right,
which was
right,
kind of weird. Right. It was just a weird choice. It's interesting. You want to know like how everybody showed up.
I also noticed, I was trying to look up, there was somebody who showed up named Rick. They were referring to him as Rick, and I just felt like that was the most 80s cameo. I don't know who Rick was, but if somebody's just going to randomly show up in the studio, it would be a guy named Rick in 1984.
Yeah. Oh, no, he's also in Status Quo. He's one of the old guys. That's probably
he's
the
one
guy
of the guys with the Yayo.
That's probably the guy. Oh, that is him. It's the guy with the SFLB, the mullet.
They got a lot of FaceTime on that documentary.
Because they had the Coke. They had the clown powder.
Yeah, yep. That was so you got to figure all these guys are in their 20s at the time. He's born 1948. So he's the 40-year-old dude hanging around.
He's the chaperone with Coke.
Yeah, he brought the, and he's the guy that's like, "Oh yeah, I'm feeling it today." And you know, like those guys partied a lot. So if he was really getting after it, you know, he shouldn't have been feeling that bad. Okay. Let's play it. Let's listen to the 1984 Band-Aid Jam, Do They Know It's Christmas? And I'll be honest, Jay Stu loves this song. Ed Daly hates this song. And I was kind of in the hate camp.
I gotta say, I don't hate it. I don't feel the same things that Jay Stu feels.
Well, I mean, were you into Depeche Mode and Echo and the Bunnymen and The Cure and all those bands back then?
I kind of was. I mean, I told you I liked some of it, but it just didn't speak to me. Like, yeah, it was just another song.
It just seemed like a cool charity song as opposed to the usual pop.
I mean,
cheesy ass song
was horrendous.
Awful.
Yeah. I mean, We Are the World was like, they had like all these lyrics. It's almost like they wrote just a bunch of words and they're like, you gotta squeeze it into a song. And it was clumsy and shit. This one just seemed to flow. They had cool lyrics. Even the line that Bono delivers that
this is the worst line ever.
He always regretted though, but the way he sings it is amazing.
He goes for it.
Delivery is astounding.
Now that's kind of.
I don't have a problem with the words, by the way.
I want to point out Rick from Status Quo died of a quote shoulder injury.
You can't die from a shoulder injury.
I think that's called booger sugar.
He died
by way of he died in 2017, January 2017.
R.I.P.
It was December 22nd, 2016. So almost 3 years ago, exactly.
3 days before George Michael, by the way.
Is that Wikipedia page?
That was his last Christmas.
that's a good one.
Okay, easy, Jason.
Does it also say on that page about Status Quo that the reason why we don't know who Status Quo is because they remained Status Quo and weren't able to move with the time.
Nice, Jason. Good job. Yeah. Jason nailed that one. Okay, let's play the song.
There's a long intro of silence.
I know. Why is that?
Oh, here we go. Are we talking over the song, or are we just going to play?
Well, I'll
pause. We should talk over this.
Yeah.
No,
It's Christmas time. Paul Young. He's taking it real seriously.
He does have a good voice. He's just a little too feeling himself.
Yeah. Also, big 80s thing, rolling up the sleeves on your t-shirt.
Yeah, it's the move that weathermen do during storms. You're really getting into it. You're going to roll up the sleeves. You're getting after it.
Right. You're there to work. Like, I'm there. I'm here to show you I'm ready to work.
Now, are you just going to put, okay, could you rewind it at all or no?
Yeah.
Well, are you just going to rewind it a little bit? Allow me to set up the Boy George part with context.
Okay.
So Kyle Brandt and I used to have an argument about this song.
Kyle Brandt, that real cool guy. That's a fan of me for no reason. That's he's blocked me on Twitter for no reason. Somebody that I've never had any interaction with that I don't know. Apparently doesn't like me. Do you want to shed some light on that, Jason? He's a friend of yours.
The funny thing is, you two would get along. That's what's funny about.
I know.
You guys.
He hates me. He hates my guts.
So if we can set aside Brian's personal problems,
I don't have any personal problems. I'm fine. I don't have any problems with anybody.
Personal problem with him?
Yeah, exactly.
The point of contention though with this song, and he loved it as much as I did, but he always said that the one singer that stands out and kills it, steals the moment, is George Michael. And I disagree. I think Boy George kills it.
He does. And I agree.
Say, I'm with you, because they show in the documentary. So, Brian, you might want to talk about Boy George. We mentioned that he was in New York. But they spend a lot of time talking about getting Boy George to the studio.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he was on all of the cocaine back then.
Yeah. And he was asleep and they kept calling him and he was supposed to be there. Then he gets on the Concorde, shows up and they show him and he's all tuned up when Haggard. He shows up in the studio. Yeah. But he fucking delivers.
He nails it. The guy can sing.
He's the best part of this song.
The guy can sing. Yeah. It's amazing. Let's get to it.
The part that they give him is great. And then they give him a little bit of a I don't even know what I don't know if there's a musician on this podcast, but whatever it's called when they just kind of do their own little thing at the end of a lyric, something that wasn't in the actual song that they had written, but he just kind of did a little improv.
Like an improv thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know. So let's hear it.
Scatting, if you will.
Yeah. Skinny Beba.
Come on. Uh-huh. And then there's Phil Collins. Woo! George Michael.
I like when they showed Boy George showing up in the studio and the stairs look like he has to talk himself through every step. Like I keep getting them confused. Boy George.
George Michael, studio, it's confusing.
When he's walking up, when he walks up the steps, you feel like he's saying step, 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 like everything. He's really zonked out by the time
That's where all the fans are outside they're like trying to hold that door closed and all the fans are outside screaming. Yeah.
And for some reason he uses like Simon Le Bon as a crutch. He's like, "Come with me, Simon. Let's go up these stairs."
And then he gets to the studio. He's been doing all the drugs, and then you assume he slept
nails
the Concorde. He nails it, and then he's slugging down cognac straight from the bottle.
I couldn't tell. I'm like, is that cognac? Because he's pounding it from the bottle.
That is an aggressive drink right there.
I love
what you hear.
Yeah, go ahead.
You hear, I've done a lot of analysis of this part because I've always defended Boy George as the biggest, the best singer on this whole song.
He's great.
You hear the way he performs these like three lines and you're thinking, man, what a waste. Like, he should have been the George Michael. Like, with a voice like that, why? He just kind of sputtered out, right? Culture Club just kind of did its thing in the late 80s and then he just kind of went away, right?
I think they were a bit there was more gimmick to him.
Yeah.
There was more.
He can sing though.
A look and everything, but he clearly had the talent. If he just surrounded himself around, with the right hit makers,
I think
he definitely had the talent.
I think he DJs now. And I just, in case you couldn't tell by my voice, I'm doing air quotes. I think he's a DJ now.
Fun fact. I went to a club in London where he was a DJ in like 96, and he was definitely needing cash, yeah. And he was the DJ there, and it was not my scene because it was like house music, but I saw him DJ and it at the Ministry of Sound in London. And it was just, I at that point I thought he only had a couple years left because he was out of money and he had a bad cocaine problem, but he's still kicking.
Well, remember when he held that kid, he held like a sex slave hostage and almost went to prison for it. Yeah. It was like a Rick James situation where he had a rent boy like in Manhattan at his condo and wouldn't let him leave. What's that?
He was Ted Haggarding?
Yeah. Yeah. And he was like, it was like a kidnapping situation and he almost went to prison for it, but pled it out. I think he had to, you know, like pick up trash on the freeway.
Well, my fun fact about Boy George, my kind of brush with fame is, when I used to tweet about this song, I used to proclaim that Boy George outshines everybody, including George Michael. And I at tweeted both of them. I think this is when George was alive. And Boy George blocked me. I think to this day he blocked me. Even though I praised him as being the biggest star on the song, he blocked me. I can't read his timeline.
Shut up. Boy George is on Twitter?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
There's a lot to unpack that statement.
Unbelievable. Okay, let's check out the real star of this song, though. George Michael. And just one of the – for a guy – that is a superstar. For a guy that had more hits and did more incredible things in the music business than 99.9% of people, and he's gorgeous. He's a Greek British guy. I would argue still to this day in memoriam, this guy is underrated for how fucking special and amazing and talented he was, George Michael.
Don't disagree.
Oh, there's Simon Le Bon.
Yeah, he's doing the beauty of the kill.
Yeah, he's got it. Simon Le Bon has to like kind of whine it. Oh. Should we talk about Sting's haircut? Because, you know, Sting...
He looked like he cut it himself.
Yeah, he's got like a center part.
He's got a bit of a Dutch boy, but it looks like he cut it himself.
Yeah, it's kind of like a Prince Valiant. It doesn't have the bangs. It's a weird... And Sting, let's be honest, the guy is fucking beautiful. He's gorgeous.
He's probably just took a timeout from an 8-hour fuck session to be there.
He fucks a lot. He's a learned man. He plays a bass with no frets. He's very talented. Although I just saw right before we were starting, I had the TV on while I was watching the documentary on my computer, and I looked up and there was a commercial for his musical that he's written and starring in that is currently running at the Amundsen Theater in Hollywood. Jay Stu, should we get together? Should we use some of your connections, the connections that never get me Charger tickets, that never get me Laker tickets or Dodger tickets? Should we use some of your Hollywood connections to get us tickets to Sting's The Last Ship, currently being performed at the Amundsen Theater.
The Last Ship? What?
The Last Ship.
Yeah, that's what it's called. That's what it's called. And he's in it. He stars in it. And it looks...
It's going to be like Synchronicity, the musical.
No, it looks... It's got like a Hamilton vibe without the rapping. Just pure awfulness. Also...
Interesting.
Also, Sting wearing a scarf indoors for this.
That's on brand.
I don't know who this guy is. I think he might be a Spandau Ballet guy.
He is Spandau Ballet.
Yeah. That is Spandau.
Oh, look how little Bono is. So little.
Oh, yeah. It's like the kids' table.
Now, here's the thing. Bono gets the solo, and it's coming up. Fine. Cool. That this is modern Bono. And in 1984, Bono for sure was a known quantity. U2, Boy, War, they had shit out. But they didn't.
Sunday Bloody Sunday had already come out.
That had come out for sure. But what hadn't come out was the Joshua Tree. He was still a minor. He wasn't a big time rock.
Joshua Tree is what put him on the map.
Right. He wasn't a big time rock superstar. And meanwhile, he gets the big fucking growl in this song, which is crazy. Phil Collins in a sweater vest.
He looks like he's about to go shoot nine holes.
Yeah. You know what's funny is every time someone pops on the screen and I don't know who they are, I assume they're in Spandau Ballet.
That's a good assumption.
There's George.
There
Boy George.
There he is.
Spandau Ballet. Paul Young. Here he comes. There's Siobhan. Oh, there's Cool. Jody Watley.
I feel like Kool and the gang didn't realize they were there. They just showed up and they're like, what are we doing?
Their managers,
we don't know any of these people.
Their managers just like, hey, there's going to be a bunch of white people. Just go hang out.
Because you need to color up the studio. But yeah. Like, we know you don't know anyone here.
Well, they're also singing for black people. And there's exactly two black people in the group.
I got to tell you, though, as you're playing it. Yeah. Starting to feel it a little bit.
It's good, right?
I didn't know that I felt this.
Yeah,
way,
it's kind of good.
It's that driving beat, that driving bass, and it sounds cool. And by the way, Ed had said something just in passing that we need to kind of cover. George Michael, not only was he in Wham during this time, and Wham was a massive band at that time. They had Careless Whisper song and all those other the
Jitterbug.
You do the jitterbug
and all that shit, right? So
I believe
Wham.
Yeah,
go this on. Guy does the largest selling first solo album ever. I want to say nobody has chased him down.
Freedom is that what?
Faith was the thing that just. Like it made him a world superstar.
Huge.
This guy gets uncomfortable with the fame and he starts to have it out with his record company. He tells the record company, I'm going to make you a double album. One is love songs and the other one's going to be dance songs, which the record company wanted. This fucking guy had the balls to say, I'm going to do the album of love songs and never do the album of dance songs.
Amazing.
And he just went to the court and sued these guys for like 5 or 6 years.
But then he came out in the early 90s.
My sister had his poster over her bed.
So
I would like to point that out to
my friend Kelly. You know, we were in like seventh grade and he had
Kelly two putts.
He had no different Kelly. That's Telly Kelly.
I know.
No, I like that. He had the George Kelly Michael poster. Putts. And he would like affect like a whole George Michael thing like around town. And it was before we, you know, knew. Yeah, it's like stuff wasn't that obvious to us back then. We didn't realize that these guys were trying to tell us something.
Oh, yeah. Like, but back to what you were saying originally is he's underrated, but he's also like you feel like he never he never had as many hits as he should have.
Totally. Totally agree.
Like, the guy, yeah. Underrated yeah. on what he accomplished, but he could have accomplished more. He was fucking talented.
He was super talented.
Whenever this happens, whenever an act takes someone to court, whether it's George Michael taking these guys to the court or Pearl Jam taking Ticketmaster, whatever, there seems to be like this
Prince.
There seems to be this like gap that they lost. Like if they had been making music in that gap when they were hottest, we could have gotten a lot more hit songs. And by the time he came out of that, he was almost like kind of forgotten about. He's but an amazing act. And I recommend, I think Showtime did the documentary on him. Or maybe it was HBO, but find it and watch it. It's great.
Chuck Berry, when he got arrested for the bullshit racist charges that were really, you know, like moving a person across state lines.
This is before he was arrested for the very legitimate charges of putting a camera in his restaurant toilet to watch girls pee.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Okay. I'm just making sure.
That was yeah. the bitter.
That was different.
Out of cash, Chuck Berry.
Right.
But originally he was killing it, and then they said, "Oh, you move somebody across state lines," which it was just a rule to punish black people.
I think they got Jack Johnson for that back in the day too. Yeah.
So they got him for that, but while he was in jail for that, or while he was going through legal troubles for that, was the British invasion, and then he just became a nostalgia act,
right? Because they were all doing his thing.
He missed out on that, yes. that time where he could have been a bigger right. deal.
Yeah.
So that goes to Jason's point that there's like, you know, when you have legal issues, that just trips up your career.
You get a small window. So while we're on Christmas songs, we talked about Band-Aid, Do They Know It's Christmas After All? And now we're talking about George Michael. If we're talking Christmas songs. It's my understanding that George Michael wrote this song and very magnanimously shared the songwriting credit with Andrew Ridgely. And Andrew Ridgely lives very comfortably, not unlike Jay Stu from his royalties from Gary Unmarried, lives very comfortably on the money he makes from this songwriter.
But I think that, I mean, if you look up George Michael Last Christmas, you're not going to find it. It's a Wham song.
It's a Wham song.
He shared all those songs with
right,
that guy.
Right. Even though
he wrote all the songs too, didn't he?
Yeah. Even though it's that, you know, that's bands go through that where they're like, hey, I write the songs.
Right.
I get the money from writing the songs, but sometimes they'll share. In that.
I just want to point out, I googled Last Christmas George Michael, and it does pop up.
Yeah.
Jason.
No. I'm saying if you go to Spotify or Amazon,
I get it. What are some other? Because I have a list.
The best Christmas song of all time, Darlene Love, Baby Please Come Home. To me, that's the best.
Okay, let's Google it. Or YouTube it, Darlene. Darlene Love.
You just named a song that I have no idea. It doesn't ring a
bell. Christmas Baby, Please Come Home. Oh, this is on the David Letterman show, which will be even better. It's a live version.
This is the Phil Spector. This is the greatest Christmas song of all.
Yeah. I think I just read that there was a bidding war to get Darlene Love to come on and sing this on two different networks' Christmas shows, and ABC, she's sung it on CBS for years, and CBS didn't want to pay her, so ABC is now paying her to come on Christmas night and sing this.
Performing her holiday classic for us, our good dear friend, Darlene Love.
Now, if we were a bigger show, we wouldn't be allowed to play these songs because they catch you for that. It would be my dream to get kicked off the internet for playing these songs. Oh, I know this jam. It's hot. It's yep. Crazy. Yep. Great. I've been watching the, I think it's called, I can't remember what it's called, but it's the John and Yoko documentary about the making of Imagine on Netflix.
Oh, that's probably interesting.
Highly recommend. I don't know how people know to have a fucking camera. It's the 60s.
70s. Hold on.
Early 70s. And they're rolling tape the whole time, and Phil Spector is there, and he's fucking little, and he's in a wig, and he's wearing sunglasses and a suit in the middle of the summer, and everybody there that's recording is completely terrified of him, and John Lennon is writing these amazing songs, and then he's playing them live, and Yoko is just going,
the worst.
In the middle of his fucking song, and he's just fine with it.
Even that Christmas song, she like is whispering in the beginning.
Horrible.
She's awful. Phil Spector Christmas album though is really good.
Yeah.
The Ronettes.
Yeah.
It's a great Christmas
Amazing.
Album.
Amazing.
Didn't Yoko convince Lennon to save Imagine for his solo career? Like he was going to do it as a Beatles song.
Oh, that could be true.
On the last album on Let It Be.
That's not surprising. I do like George Harrison. The songs that of his first solo album that was the number one album. Those were all ones that like John Lennon told him, "Yeah, this is shit. We're not doing this." And it was like My Sweet Lord and all these like huge hits.
All Things Must Pass. It's arguably the greatest post Beatles solo album.
It is such a good album.
It's amazing. It's incredible. And I listen to it all the time. I like this. Have you guys ever heard the song? This is an Atlanta band called the Black Lips, Christmas in Baghdad.
I don't know this.
Yeah. You should put it on your mix. You can talk over it. These guys are singing about being at war during Christmas. This is modern.
Oh, this is modern. Yeah. You're blocked by Lord George.
Christmas in Baghdad can be such a drag. Don't want to come home and fight it back. No care, no cheer.
What about another classic? The Beach Boys, Little Saint Nick. Ed, I feel like you might have a problem with the song because you don't like the Beach Boys.
It might be the only Beach Boys song on my phone. There's a nostalgia aspect to the song.
It's amazing.
Well, way up north where the air gets cold, there's a tale about that you've all been told, and a real famous cat all dressed up in red. And woo! He spends the whole year working out in his sled. It's the little
Ed, you're gonna say?
I would say of more, and when I say modern, at this point modern is just inside of like 50 years.
Yep.
Father Christmas by the Kinks.
Amazing.
A terrific song.
On so my list. And I see that Twitter friend of mine from the great Boston band Letters to Cleo, Kay Hanley, they have recorded a cover of Father Christmas this year.
Okay.
I don't have it handy to me, but I have the Kinks version. Great. And it's one of, if not the all-time greatest Christmas song, Father Christmas by the Kinks. Kinks, for one of the great rock and roll bands of all time, for the guys that are the guys that are credited with inventing distortion.
Underrated.
Vastly
underrated.
Yes. Made so many.
And I would hang up my stocking at Christmas, open my presents, and I'd be glad. But the last time I played Father Christmas,
I mean, come on.
Stood outside a department
Great
store.
Song.
Amazing. Fairy Tale of New York. My all-time favorite Christmas song. Shane McGowan, The Pogues, Fairy Tale of New York, because it's, you can identify with it, you know? It's a, we've all been in this position. Tell me a time this hasn't been your story.
It was Christmas Eve, babe, in the drunk tank.
It's one of those Christmas songs that, you know, one of those random Christmas songs where they rhyme maggot and faggot.
Yeah.
That's a usual Christmas song.
Also, kind of didn't know this till this moment. Matt Dillon plays the cop in the video.
Really?
Yeah. I like how Shane McGowan has to pretend he has to act drunk in the drunk tank. Yeah.
And also, they're not Irish. They're from London.
Oh, are they?
I looked it up. Like, they're from King's Cross, London. Oh. Like, they're not, like, right in the middle of London. It's weird that they have this expectation, the way they do the Irish music. They're not Irish.
Yeah, interesting.
Maybe they're Irish descent. They're London.
Irish roots. We got to get to the chorus before I quit this.
When all our dreams come true. Queen of New York City. When the band finished playing, they held out for more. Sinatra was swinging, all the jokes they were saying.
I like in the video.
The boys at the end
of the video.
You gotta watch the video. It's nothing that spectacular about the video, except that the whole band has ashtrays going, and they all, literally everyone in the band, has a cigarette next to them.
I never realized how much I like that song.
It's great, right?
It's a great song.
If you can cue this one up, because it's becoming my favorite song, out of protest. John Legend and Kelly Clarkson redid this song in the last year or so, and it's just such a politically correct version of a song that is fairly harmless, and the original, it's called Outside.
Let's fuck. That's all it is. I'm gonna pin you down. It's just let's fuck. It's cold outside.
Can I say something political here? Like, what
does that mean? You're not gonna tweet about it?
Whatever happened to the art of seduction? Like, have we gotten to the point where we need to hand each other like signed contracts before we agree to move forward and have intercourse?
I heard something about you need consent to change positions now. Hey,
I'm gonna flip you over, girl. It's cold outside. It's a charming song. I'm a sucker for a duet.
You talking about the Dean Martin version?
Yes, I always liked
it. Dean Martin, that's like all standards. That's a pretty solid Christmas album too.
Dean Martin fucks.
Oh, he certainly did.
But let me reemphasize, over the last couple of years, I like this song even more. The original song, due to them trying to bastardize it with a bunch of political correct shit.
I'm trying to YouTube it right now, and it's like a...
Maybe YouTube took it off because it's offensive.
This isn't Dean Martin, is it?
No, it's from the a movie. Yes, I
really can't. Well, there's a great part in Elf where they sing this. Baby, it's cold
outside. I mean, he's getting pretty forceful. Oh, he takes off her jacket. Your hands. They're just like ice. My mother will start to worry. Beautiful. What's your hurry? He takes off her hat. Listen
to the fire. Okay, this sounds a little bit aggressive.
It's kind of rapey. He won't let her leave. Put some
records on while I fall. This sounds a little rapey. Baby. Dean's doing it smooth.
Yeah. Hold on. Let's find the Dean Martin version. Baby, it's cold outside. Dean Martin. Dean Martin. Oh, here we go. Oh, Dean Martin and Doris Day. Come on.
Yeah, this is about fucking.
Yeah.
I really can't stay. But baby, it's cold outside. Got to go. But baby, it's cold outside. This evening has been hoping that you drop in. I'll hold your hands, they're just like ice.
Yeah, hold your hands. I'll bind your hands.
Listen to the fireplace roar.
I'll go BTK you on you. Please don't
worry. Put some records on while I pour. Baby, it's bad.
It's playful. There. It's playful.
No cabs to be had.
Yeah, he's not actually doing a rape.
Your eyes are like starlight now.
Also, Dean Martin, come on. I mean, he could get anything he wants.
Could I quote Deanna Martin? Hello.
Yeah.
Deanna Martin.
Dean Martin?
Are we playing another Christmas song?
No, we're just talking here, buddy.
We're having a conversation.
So to quote Deanna Martin, who's the daughter of Dean Martin.
Oh, uh-huh.
She's a woman, by the way. She has a vagina.
She's an actress.
Yep.
She says, I think what John Legend's done, he's stealing the thunder from Frank Wasser's song and from my dad. He should write his own song if he doesn't like this one. Don't change the lyrics. It's a classic. It's a perfect song.
I kind of agree.
That's a woman who says
that. We don't need to be overly woke about things.
Yeah. It's okay to just for a guy to be a little thirsty in a song.
Yeah.
I got a semi-modern, probably also 45 years old, Merry Christmas, I Don't Want to Fight Tonight by the Ramones. That's a good one.
Hold on, let's play this one first. You like this
song. This is the worst song.
Yeah.
Paul McCartney fell in love with synthesizers and cocaine. The mood is right. The spirit's up. So bad. We're here tonight. And that's enough.
Simply having a wonderful Christmas time. It really does suck, I gotta be honest.
It's not catchy at all. The feeling's here
that only comes. No, it's very like jilted. Stilted is the word I was looking for. Meanwhile,
just went crazy on the organ in that song. Like, yeah. Somebody just went off on that.
There's literally what? The Ramones. Never did anything that wasn't fucking perfect.
And everything was short.
Yeah.
It was just rock out for like 2 minutes and 40 seconds, and then you're done. Great. This song's fucking.
Come on. I like that in the video, the dad has a yarmulke on. This is later Ramones because Dee Dee.
Oh, this might be the early 80s, right?
Yeah, Dee Dee, Dee Dee Ramone's gone.
Are the Ramones going to do a fucking Christmas song or album if they're not late in their careers and in need of money?
Right.
Well, hey, I feel like a lot of my Christmas albums happened after the Tax Man showed up.
Yeah. Right, right.
Like after April 15th, they're like, you know what, you're going to need to do a Christmas album this year.
Like, idea.
I remember, a few years ago, who's I Want You to Want Me? The
Cheap Trick.
Yeah. They Howard Stern was playing this. They do I Want You for Christmas.
I know.
And it's like, that is a Taxman move right there. Like, it's 30 years after that song, and it's like, you know what? We're out of cash. We got to do something. So they just recorded that.
This is a plot line in that movie Love Actually, the Christmas song, where the old aging rock star changes the lyrics to his big song. Now,
I'll tell you about Love Actually. It's a fucking hard one to get through. Like, I get why people like it.
I like it for, you know, the feel good Christmassy thing, but it's beyond problematic. We could do that one sometime.
You're right. That, talk about rapey and like questionable. There's a couple things in it. Now, I don't even know if this is a Christmas song, but since it says the word Christmas in it, I'm going to put it in. You talk about a rocker, not as good as the Ramones, but Christine Hine wrote this song called 2,000 Miles.
Great song.
You play 2,000 Miles, Brian. You got to get to the part where she says Christmas. So
Do you mean
2,000 Miles by the Pretenders?
Do you mean Chrissy Hind?
Did you say Christy?
Because you said Christy Hind.
No, it's Chrissy Brinkley.
Right.
Yeah.
Jay Stu's drinking too.
Oh boy. That is a great song. An underrated band.
Oh yeah.
Pretenders are underrated.
For like a rock and roll Hall of Fame, like everybody knows their songs band, you're right.
Yeah.
Pretenders don't get the credit they deserve.
It's all about Christy Hind, I think.
Yep, Christy Hind.
This was covered by Coldplay, by the way.
Oh, so an even better version.
Here we go.
2,000 miles. It's very far. The snow is falling down. It's colder day by day. I miss you. The children will sing. He'll be back at Christmas time.
Boom!
Amazing, amazing.
I will say this is, you know, I know we're running long.
Yeah.
This song I wouldn't say is classically good.
Okay.
But it's a fun romp through a lot of traditional songs. Merry Motherfucking Christmas by Eazy-E.
Oh, I don't think I know that one.
It's a mess of a song, but it was a lot of fun to get drunk and smoke weed to in college.
Didn't Run DMC did a
Christmas in the House is a classic.
That's a jam.
Great song.
It's their second most streamed song ever. Like if you go to the Beach Boys who did all of those amazing tunes, especially on Pet Sounds, their number one song streamed is their Christmas song.
Yeah, these Little Saint Nick, which we played earlier.
Major cash on these. Yeah, I know. I'm just saying that this song, I mean the Christmas in Hollis by Run DMC, that's their second most streamed song ever.
That's a legitimately great song.
It's great.
That is great. Chris.
I've never heard this song.
It's so good. It's so bad and so good.
Oh, by the way, but John Lennon has a problem with Maybe It's Cold Outside. He doesn't have a problem
John
with
Legend.
Suck My Dick Tomorrow Day.
Did he say John Lennon?
Yeah, he said John Lennon. Christy Hyde, John Lennon. Okay, I think we should wrap it up. What do you guys think? Yeah. You guys have anything to add?
I think, yeah. Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, Happy New Year to all of our listeners.
We love all of our listeners. I feel like episode came out fantastic. It was a pleasure to do. I had so much fun.
How impressive were we? We took a song and did it an hour and a half on it.
We did. Well, so I thought we wouldn't. I'm like, we should talk about some other songs because we're never going to be able to talk about Band-Aid for that long. And then we did. We talked about Band-Aid for an hour.
We are legitimately great.
Yeah, we could have gone another 45 minutes. I had to cut it short to talk about more songs.
Yes.
Amazing.
We're great.
The greatest holiday song ever. I just have a feeling that a lot of our listeners are like, yeah, I know the song, but it's not that big a deal. Do me a favor. Play it like three times in a row and then tweet at us that you don't love it.
Like Candyman? Three times.
I'm trying
to solicit people for my song.
Like Ed Daly hated it before we did this episode, and now he's into it. And I'll tell you what, I didn't hate it.
It was not like top. No, I didn't hate it, but it was not on the top. And I really enjoyed it by the end of this process.
There you go.
I was not that into it. I thought it was okay, but when I watched it with the video, I was like, "Oh yeah, this shit is fucking fire!" So good, so many talented people. It was amazing. Speaking of talented people, I want to thank Ed Daly for 300 episodes of this. This is
the 300.
Yeah, this is 300 episodes we've done. Ed Daly is a machine. He is the fucking backbone of what we do here. The guy has ideas coming out of his ideas. I just talk. Ed Daly comes up with the shit we're going to talk about, and I couldn't do without him. He is the man of the hour, every hour. And Jay Stu, always fucking great to have you. I can't wait to talk about The Bachelor. You are a unique persona. There is no one else like you. He's our Chuck Cunningham.
And by the way, yep. What an honor it is to be on 300. And I'm not even exaggerating when I say this. I think people will want to listen to this episode more than they will want to watch the movie 300.
Oh, yeah.
With Gerard Butler.
Never seen
Jerry Butler. I mean,
yeah,
love looking at him.
I'll be honest. I've never seen 300, but I definitely have seen Angel. I've seen Angel Has Fallen, and I've seen.
Well, that's way better.
I've seen Den of Thieves.
Seen 300, and I remember there being like a big outpouring of love for 300, and I was like, that shitty movie.
Wasn't it all CGI?
It looked groundbreaking odd. In that respect. It was groundbreaking in how it looked. Yes.
It looked like sort of a comic book. It looked odd.
Yeah, it's like a CGI Gladiator.
It looked like Sin City. It looked like one of these weird kind of movies.
I'm out. I love Jerry Butler.
But it had Jerry Butler.
By the way, Brian.
The woman was pretty hot, too. Yeah.
Yes, Jason.
Maybe this will get you to watch it. Cersei Lannister naked in 300.
I'd like to see that. I wouldn't mind seeing that. Might have to get a Mr. Skin password for that. Jason Stewart, always incredible to have you on the show. Love having you on the regular show. Love doing the Bachelor Lifestyle with you. Coming up in just a couple of weeks, Bachelor season starting. We might have to get Reality Steve on to discuss that. Also for Fancy Sauce. Fancy Sauce is not here, but very big part of the show. Miss Fancy Sauce. Next year, big things coming next year. For Ed Daly, for Jason Stewart, my name is Brian Beckner. This has been episode 300 of the Baller Lifestyle Podcast. It's amazing. We will see you next week.
Goodbye.
You with some movies and shows and others. Top podcast, man. No one is above us. 5-star. Even the haters will love us. And we're not trying to talk politics a lot. We'd much rather talk about dicks a lot. Shit's so hot. Man, you know the shit's on top. Top podcast, man. It really hits the spot. Listen up, you players and shot callers. TBLS, the lifestyle's baller. And you know the show is so flawless. TBLS, the lifestyle's baller. Listen up, you players and shot callers. TBLS, the lifestyle's baller. And you know the show is for all us. TBLS.
the lifestyle's baller.